Hello and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the major unanswered questions from the Larry Nassar debacle at Michigan State University, who at the top knew what and when? Even though Title IX investigations were done after athletes accused Nassar of sexual assault, top school officials say they didn't know about them. Today, a bipartisan group in Congress announced a bill called the ALERT Act. That stands for the Accountability of Leaders in Education to Report Title IX Investigations Act. One of the bill's co-sponsors is Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, Democrat from Michigan's 8th District, who's with us now. What problem are you and your co-sponsors hoping to solve with the ALERT Act? Give us a for instance.
Sure. So the ALERT Act is related to the responsibilities at universities when a Title IX case is filed. So those are the cases having to do with a bunch of things, but including sexual assault on campus. And what this does is basically say if there's a Title IX complaint that's filed against a university employee, that case must be notified to the president's office and to at least one member on the Board of Trustees. So it basically addresses this problem that we saw during the whole Nassar scandal at MSU, where senior ranks of MSU leadership previously said they didn't know, they weren't aware, they couldn't have helped because they didn't know what was happening. This removes that as a possibility and an excuse.
And what are the consequences? What's at stake for schools?
Well, it is basically just a new way of governing and thinking about Title IX. You know, I don't know if there is a criminal penalty, but we wanted to make clear that this did come with a guidance based on our actual experience in Michigan. So that's why you see so many Michiganders who are going to be releasing the bill today, and bipartisan. Something I'm very, very happy about and very proud about is that this bill, both on the Senate side and on the House side, is being introduced in a bipartisan fashion. Frankly, as the representative of Michigan State University, the survivors were the ones who urged all of us to not make this a political issue, to keep it bipartisan because it's about the safety and security of our students.
Now, just to be very, very clear, this is not about sexual assaults committed by undergrad students. This is somebody who works for the university.
That's correct.
Okay, just to be clear on that. But I do want to turn to the new Title IX procedures and changes coming out of the Education Department and Secretary Betsy DeVos's proposed rule changes. She wants to narrow the definition of exactly what harassment is and ensure people who are accused are more protected. And you've criticized these changes. Why?
Well, I mean, I think it takes us in the absolute wrong direction. It's like willfully ignoring the lessons of what happened with Larry Nassar at MSU. And specifically as a Michigander, that's just hard for me to understand. So she has proposed some changes formally to Title IX. Those were out for comment for a while. She got over 100,000 formal comments, including one from me, because basically it's, as you said, trying to narrow the scope. So for instance, if an assault takes place just off campus, 25 feet off campus, right, at another location, a doctor's office, then that is not grounds for a formal Title IX complaint if she gets her way and the rules go through. So to me, that's crazy. If it's a university employee who is likely being seen because he's a university employee and just happens to be off campus when the assault takes place, then that should absolutely be grounds for a Title IX complaint like it was with Larry Nassar. And the original 2014 Amanda Thomashaw's complaint against Larry Nassar, which is the thing that started the tidal wave, she was technically off campus when that took place. So her complaint wouldn't have been a legitimate complaint under Betsy DeVos's proposed new rules. And I just think it takes us in the absolute wrong direction. And I've been very clear with her what I think. Now, I have to give her kudos because she has agreed to meet me in my office on May 9th. And I'm hoping we can talk person to person, Michigander to Michigander, about, you know, my concerns about what this means for campuses and in particular how important I think it is for her as a person to meet with the survivor advocates, to spend time with them.
You've done that, and I know you've challenged her to meet with the Nassar survivors, so that I take it will be on your agenda when you meet with her.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've been spending a lot of time. I've been learning a ton from the survivor advocates. I just think no matter who you are, until you've spoken with the survivors themselves, the families. You know, I just went and saw the amazing exhibit they have at MSU up right now. The survivors helped design the entire thing. It is incredibly powerful. A number of them and their moms took me through it. And I just think if you're going to be making decisions, as Secretary DeVos is, for hundreds and thousands, millions potentially of students, including K through 12, by the way, then you should be talking to the people who have experienced it before you make any changes.
There are valid concerns, Congresswoman, that expanding definitions of sexual harassment could lead to unfair accusations and consequences. How do we best keep things fair for both accuser and accused? Isn't that what the secretary is trying to do with her rule changes?
So first of all, I'm not saying we need to have the conversation about expanding it, but we shouldn't be limiting it, right? That's what she's doing, is limiting it. I think absolutely we have to be transparent and accountable whenever an accusation comes forward for both the survivor, but also for the small and rare cases where there may be someone who's falsely accused, right? That happens in a tiny fraction of cases. It's commensurate with any other crime in terms of false accusations. But we have to have transparent and accountable processes that would meter that out, that would say, okay, you know what, this is one of those rare cases, and we're not going to ruin someone's life over it.
Shifting gears, with your extensive background in national security, I'd like to hear your views on the Mueller report. What are your main takeaways from this investigation?
Sure. So I said that I was going to read all the entire thing. I read the 448 pages. And listen, I mean, I don't think there's anyone who feels good about what came out of that report. For me, there were a lot of things in particular that I didn't know about what the Russians did, particularly in social media, and particularly targeted at Michigan. And the thing that was just stunning to me, to be honest, is that basically for about $100,000 of ads on social media, they reached potentially 129 million Americans. We know that there were demonstrations and protests that were invented and advertised by Russians in our political process. And I just think that that is an absolute assault on our democracy. And I think that there are specific things that we can be doing to protect ourselves in 2020.
And there is something called the Paid Ad Act. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Paid Ad Act is something that I'm introducing again bipartisan with my Republican colleague Elise Stefanik from upstate New York. And it closes a loophole that currently exists in our law that makes it totally legal for foreign actors to buy ads in our political system, either for or against a candidate or on an issue that's really important in our election. And I saw the examples of what was used in Michigan. I mean, it's just horrible. They're divisive. They're meant to split us apart as Michiganders and foment dissent amongst us and keep us distracted so we're not focusing on things like Russia's activities abroad. And I just think that has no place in our system. So that closes a loophole. This bill closes a loophole so that it is illegal for foreigners to buy ads in our political process.
What are you hearing from your constituents about the Mueller report and all of this information that you've taken in from reading it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely hearing from people who are deeply concerned about the threats to democracy. I'm definitely hearing from people who are concerned about the president and his administration's activities. But to be honest with you, when I was home, the overwhelming number of questions that I got over a two-week period were on things like the price of prescription drugs, on healthcare and the price of healthcare, on whether we're going to get an infrastructure package out of Congress, you know, this spring. Those kinds of sort of pocketbook and kid issues. And it's not that people aren't interested in the Mueller report. They are, but they're also simultaneously interested in kind of getting some relief, particularly on the issue of health care.
One of the biggest questions facing Democrats, and I have to ask you, do you support impeaching President Trump?
So not at this time. I mean, I think we're going to go through a process as a country, and there are oversight committees here in the Congress that are, you know, issuing subpoenas and calling up, you know, Attorney General Barr and asking Bob Mueller to come and testify. we need the full unredacted report, which we haven't seen. I think that, you know, before we move to that, we just need to understand the facts, and we need to bring the American public into the conversation. And I think that that's where the beginning end of that, not at the end of it.
Last week's federal court ruling that Michigan's congressional map was unfairly gerrymandered means state lawmakers got to go back to the drawing board and come up with new lines for many challenged districts, including your district, the 8th. What does this ruling mean for your district and your political future?
Well, I thought the ruling reaffirmed, frankly, what Michigan voters agreed on back in November, right, with Proposition 2 and ending political gerrymandering. We as a state voted on that, and we voted to end political gerrymandering in our state, which is a great thing. So we already knew, myself, my colleagues in Congress, we already knew that in 2022, we were going to have redrawn districts. What the case does is just potentially speed it up. And we have to wait to see what the Supreme Court is going to do with a very closely related case in June. But as for me, the more we can reaffirm as a state and as a country that political gerrymandering isn't good for our democracy, for either side to be drawing the lines, I think that's an unambiguously good thing. And someone should just let me know what the outlines of my district will be. I'm standing by to see. And in the meantime, you know, I can't fret on something that I don't have any control over.
Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, Democrat from the 8th District, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thanks so much, Cynthia. Have a good one.